Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The Czech Republic has recorded its first death related to the coronavirus. The Minister of Education has outlined contingency plans for last year's students should schools remain closed past mid-May, and Prague has approved a 75 million crown reconstruction of the historic Malostranské square. The Czech Republic on Sunday reported the country's first death of a patient with coronavirus. A 95-year-old man with serious existing conditions who was admitted to Prague's Bulovka Hospital on the 18th of March. The man likely contracted COVID-19 in a nursing home, which is now undergoing comprehensive inspections, including testing of residents and staffers. Minister of Education Robert Plaga said on Monday that Czech schools will likely not reopen until mid-May. He told journalists that baccalaureate exams should be held 3 weeks after schools reopen. If classes do not resume by the definitive date of the 1st of June, Mr. Plaga said, students' last three school reports would have to substitute for such exams. They normally must be passed to earn a secondary school leaving certificate or high school diploma. The Czech Republic is sending 40 Italian nationals back to their home country by bus on Monday, along with 100,000 face masks to make up for those seized mistakenly in a police raid on Tuesday last week. Czech television began broadcasting a temporary channel for seniors on Monday morning to help them better understand the situation regarding the coronavirus and to cope with the quarantine. The channel, ČT3, will be broadcast daily from 9 a.m. until 5:25 p.m. It will air 15-minute news bulletins for seniors, as well as a selection of programs from the public broadcaster's archives of likely interest to older generations. Prague City Councillors have approved a 74 million crown public works project to reconstruct Malostranský Square to make it more pedestrian-friendly. The plan calls for removing a car park on the upper square, dominated by the Baroque Church of St. Nicholas, and installing in its place benches, street lamps, and a fountain, as well as widening pavements leading uphill to Prague Castle. A car park on the lower part of the historic square was already removed last year to make way for benches and vendors. The Hussite Museum in Tabor has opened an outdoor exhibition called Tabor 1420/2020, commemorating 600 years since the city in southern Bohemia was founded. Through 16 panels, it describes the history of the town through texts, photographs, and comics. The exhibition is set to run through the end of October. Certain aspects of it will not be in place until after the state of emergency regarding the coronavirus is lifted. And finally, the weather. Clear skies are in the forecast for Tuesday, with daytime highs ranging from 1 to 4 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
Hi there, listener. This is Radio Prague International, and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, with appropriate face covers in short supply, researchers in Prague design a high-quality respirator that can be made on 3D printers. Czech officials and IT groups use data to track the spread of the coronavirus. And top Czech dancer and choreographer Mitenka Čechová shares her often hair-raising experiences of studying ballet as a child, and also remembers 1990s Prague. All that's coming up, so don't go away. The coronavirus pandemic has sparked a global scramble for face masks and respirators. Most of the country's face masks are made in China and Taiwan, which currently find it hard to satisfy demand, and scientists are racing to find alternative sources. Now, a team of researchers at the Czech Institute of Computer Science, Robotics and Cybernetics has developed a high-grade respirator that can be printed on industrial 3D printers or produced by injection molding technology. Daniela Lazareva has more.
The Czech Institute of Computer Science, Robotics and Cybernetics has just made a big contribution to resolving the world's pressing need for quality respirators. The prototype, which has emerged in the space of just 1 week, meets a number of important criteria. It can be produced on HP multi-jet fusion printers, high-capacity industrial printers, or with the help of injection molding technology anywhere in the world. It is reusable, saves filter material, and is as effective as the highest standard respirators now available on the Czech market, the so-called FFP3s. The respirator is reusable following a simple disinfection procedure and filter replacement. Aviation construction engineer Alexander Lazarov, who is in charge of the project at the Institute of Computer Science, Robotics and Cybernetics, says the team raced against the clock to deliver a reliable product in record time.
We received certified approval for the ORP953D respirator at the end of last week. It was certified as an FFP3 class safety half mask with interchangeable external filters. The selected material and technology guarantees optimal properties. The respirator is flexible, light, and impermeable. The good news is that anyone who has the necessary technology, HP multi-jet fusion printers, can produce them anywhere in the world, getting exactly the same product as the original. We should be ready to start sending printing data to those who apply within days.
There are currently 8 printers with a respective technology in the Czech Republic, and all the companies who have them have already offered their full production capacities. It is estimated that one printer could print 50 to 60 respirators a day, with all 8 companies producing around 500 respirators daily for hospital staff and others in need. However, the demand on the market is much higher, and the team is now finalizing a second means of production of the respirator, which would enable mass production using molding technology. Alexander Lazarov explains.
At present, we're finalizing work on a second means of production via injection molding technology. In other words, a machine that processes plastics by injecting molten material into a ready-made mold, which will significantly increase production capacity. Once this is up and running, it will enable production of 10,000 of these respirators a week.
The materials for the respirator are widely available, and the present estimate is that the cost of one printed on a 3D printer would be under 1,000 crowns, which is considered a very good price for a high-grade respirator of this kind.
Thank you for that report, Daniela Lazareva. And staying, as we all are, with the coronavirus crisis, nearly half the people ordered by the Czech government to go into quarantine after returning from Italy failed to do so fully. This fact was discovered through the collection of anonymous payment card details. In fact, big data is being used in many ways to keep track of the COVID-19 disease. And now the Czech government has also stepped in, giving patients the option to share their movement with officials, as Tom McEncrow reports.
The shocking information that 46% of Czechs returning from Italy had not respected the government-imposed quarantine measures and gone out of their house was released on Thursday by COVID-19 CZ, an initiative of experts in the IT sector. One of their members, Petr Bednařík, from the company DataCentix, told news site Seznam Zprávy that the group was able to sift out from transaction data the amount of people that had used their card to pay in Italy and then the Czech Republic in the space of 2 weeks, the quarantine time limit imposed by the government. The group has come up with other interesting details on how Czechs have behaved during the virus pandemic. For example, they have created a website which lists the online and offline purchases Czechs have been making since mid-February. It shows that following the government close down on all shops except for food stores and pharmacies, the amount of purchases in the latter two shot up dramatically. In the case of medical purchases, the number was in fact 54% higher than over the past 3 weeks. Aside from independent initiatives, the Ministry of Health has also taken advantage of data polls. On Thursday, they began offering COVID-19 patients the option to allow their movements to be tracked. Those who give the green light after receiving a phone call from a special coordinator then contribute to establishing so-called heat maps, showing where further infections most likely took place, says Czech Radio's data journalist Jan Cibulka.
This is possible because the law obliges telecom providers to keep tracking data, specifically where the user was located and with whom they communicated 6 months back. The information can also be downloaded by state hygiene offices, but only for a period of 3 weeks back and only under the condition that the owner of the phone agrees. It enables hygiene officers to establish who the infected were in contact with and where they went, giving them the opportunity to map out locations where the virus most likely spread.
If their data does end up being used, patients are subsequently informed by text message and can ask for what purpose. According to the Health Ministry, they are theoretically obliged to cooperate based on paragraph 62A of the Public Health Protection Act and could face a fine of up to 3 million crowns if they do not. However, Mr. Cibulka says that the option to refuse does not immediately mean that the patient has broken the law.
According to Jiří Grund, the head of the Association of Mobile Network Providers, this fine does not relate to those who refuse to cooperate. The fine would only be possible if the individual either completely refused to talk to the authorities or if they purposely supplied them with false information.
That report was by Tom McEncrow. Now, in the final part of our programme today, let's meet Mirjenka Čechová, a leading figure on the Czech dance scene who has some fascinating stories to share. Mirjenka Čechová is an internationally acclaimed performer, director and choreographer, known for combining dance and physical theatre. In her recently published autobiographical novel, Baletky, or Ballet Dancers, Čechová draws on her years as a preteen and teenage student at Prague's Dance Conservatory, detailing extreme physical demands and constant psychological pressure. Nevertheless, the 38-year-old says she didn't attend the book, which also paints a vivid portrait of 90s Prague, as a kind of my ballet hell-style misery memoir. And when we spoke, I first asked her about some of the extreme things she'd been through as a young ballet student.
Ballet dance is a very specific discipline. It is like when you do a sport on very high level. You have to have certain physical disposition, you have to have mental disposition, and you have to go through certain discipline that differs based on the school where you study. And I think that in my case, I was studying dance conservatory in the 90s in Prague. It was still not too long after the fall of Iron Curtain.
And your school, sorry, was based on the Russian system, is that right?
Yes, it was. There was many Russian teachers, and I would say that also the spirit of the school was very much similar to what used to be before. But at the same time, there were, of course, some more progressive teachers, but probably I was not too lucky for those ones. When you are a child, you don't understand certain things that are happening to you as extreme. So you are basically accepting whatever is happening to you. Extreme become extreme much later when you are maybe an adult and you are watching the situation from distance. Now, I think that probably the most challenging thing was this very strict rules in physical look, how dancers supposed to look, how is their weight, their visage, even physical proportions. Before entering the school, I had to go through special medical exams where all my fat was measured, my head was measured, my facial features were measured, if they are in the right proportion. I had to write a special questionnaire about the truth of weight of my parents.
But didn't they lie about their weight to help you get accepted? Is that the case?
Well, you know, at that time, my father was already, you know, in the age when men put some weight on. And we were basically afraid that this might be a reason that they will not accept me. So he put a little bit less weight for himself. And my mother put at least a little bit less height. Because ballet dancers should not be too high, because when they stand on points, they would be much higher than their partners. So it's much better to be a little bit smaller. Then there is, of course, big pressure on how you look, even if you are in puberty. You should not have your body looking too much feminine, I would say. Our weight was controlled very regularly, every Monday morning or a few times a month.
What was going through your mind when you were standing in front of all your classmates being weighed and measured like that?
Of course, that you felt ashamed. I was pretty tall for being a ballet dancer. I have 172 centimeters. I was the highest from the whole class. And of course, because of that, I had one of the highest weight. And I didn't want that because I want to be accepted for certain classes like Dance with Partner. But if we were overcoming 50 kilos, then they were telling us, no, you can't attend because boys will not lift you. So this was very frustrating. But my weight was not very problematic. I was pretty thin all the time, also because I was scared of putting on some weight, and also because...
But also you did things to keep your weight down, like you smoked, you took laxatives.
Yeah, I think almost everyone in my class was controlling their weight certain way, from not eating at all or being on special diets, or also undergoing already some health issues like anorexia or bulimia. It was pretty common in my time at this environment.
Reading your book, I found it, I don't know anything about ballet. I was quite shocked. And I was wondering, why are parents sending their kids into this kind of system? And is it because some people have this kind of, to my mind, old-fashioned kind of bourgeois idea of what a good middle-class girl should do?
In my case, it definitely was not this way because my parents didn't want me to become a ballet dancer. I had very good grades and I had talent for many other things. Perhaps I would become either piano player or doctor. But I had a big pressure from my ballet teacher who thought that I am a big talent, and she was really pushing me to do this professionally. And me, in the age of 10, I basically became almost obsessed with this idea. Of course, you don't know what it means, actually. You have only this romantic vision of, like, standing on the stage in Swan Lake and being a center of the attention and dancing this romantic dance with your partner. So despite the fact that my parents didn't want me to go there, I really was fighting for my dream, and they eventually decided that, okay, we will try. And if you would not feel well there, you can always return. And definitely they didn't know anything from what was happening at school, because I knew that if they would know 1% of that, they would definitely put me out from the school. They will try to save me.
But that must cause a lot of pressure for especially a young teenager to have to hide their real life from their parents.
I was not living with my parents because they had to send me to Prague, to the capital that was almost 300 kilometers far from my own home. I was living in dormitory with other small girls. My parents saw me only during weekends, sometimes twice a month. And for me, it was a big adventure. At the time, I didn't see any danger. I didn't see anything bad on really going through very problematic and difficult situations, because I was following my dream, and it was a drug. Ballet was a drug. I was a very good student. I was super excited, and I was able to do everything in order to succeed.
You write about the fact that almost all of your classmates didn't stay in ballet, And there was a very high turnover rate. People came, people were thrown out, new people came, they left. Given that the chances of success seem so small, and given that it can have a lasting effect on your body, is it a good kind of bet to try to be a ballet dancer?
Well, I can't generalize this because everyone probably has different reasons. I think if you have a super great physical dispositions, which means a special way how your legs look, what's the length of your limbs, how open are your hips, all of these things matter in ballet. And if you have all of those physical features, plus you have the special mindset and big discipline in yourself, plus some luck, this is a cocktail when you can succeed. But my personality was probably, for me, really forming the decision during my studies and finding pretty problematic how we were mentally treated. And my craving for creativity, good education, plus certain freedom was things that slowly led me to decision that probably I should try another career, which came much later, but that was slowly forming during the studies as I was finding out that maybe being unified under this physical technique full of rules is not the way I want to succeed in my life.
You're quite a few years younger than I am, but I think it's very possible we were in some of the same places in the 1990s. For example, you write about the club Roxy or the pub La Casa Blu. And the book, as much as anything else, or on top of everything else, it's also a kind of memoir of Prague in the 90s. What are your standout memories of that period?
Well, for me, this is actually why I've decided to write the book, because 90s was for me the main topic. But of course, the ballet came by hand by this, because it was my path. But I remember the atmosphere as something that was in very strong opposite, almost in a contradictory to this discipline I was going through. So it was very, very freeing. And for us, it was a time when, for example, house music started, electronic music was taking over, and with clubbing, there was also drugs at this scene, there was certain anarchy that was happening, there was certain fight towards authorities that were still, some of them, part of the previous system. So the spirit in Prague in 90s was this wild child in puberty that was really our age. So in the book, I'm using this as like almost a mirror to the ballet discipline, this free spirit of the time in a contrast with very unfree spirit in the school.
Also, I guess just simply dancing in a club like Roxy or Radost must have been just a total release to you, because there were no rules.
Yeah, exactly. It was moments when you could really release certain pressure in yourself, when you could dance without being judged all the time. You could dance without watching yourself in the mirror. And the parties were about like really losing your head and dancing, because you want to dance, you want to release yourself in this collective feeling, and you want to be who you are. So I think it was one of the way that helped us to a little bit get back to our own feet.
Also, you must have been all incredible dancers.
Well, probably not in the way as the house music would suggest. Or I think we were probably these weird girls dancing weird movements among other people. But no one was actually like judging us, though we were really enjoying to do something that was like somehow against the rules, you know.
The second last line of the book includes the words, "I received the Best of Contemporary Dance Award from the Washington Post." You've had fantastic success in your career internationally. How much of that do you credit to your ballet upbringing?
Well, when I finished the conservatory, I decided I'll never dance anymore because there was this certain disillusion of, in general, dance environment because I didn't know anything else except classical ballet. Plus, I really wanted to study and to develop myself more in the intellectual way because I felt that the body is something that in certain moment will stop, have its value because dancers have very short career, and I mean classical dancers. And then there is this big gorge gap of like unknown things. But slowly, while I was studying at two universities at the same time, which was the result of my crazy discipline, I was finding my way to dance again. But it was not a ballet anymore, but it was more physical theater. It was dance theater and also, at the end, contemporary dance that was, at that time for me, in big contrast to what I was experiencing at school. A really creative environment full of people with strong creative potential discussing burning topics of our society. It was very vivid community that was engaged socially, artistically, and where I was finding my voice pretty strongly, and I found out that I want to be a creator, not an interpret.
But would you be able to do those things if you didn't have the ballet foundations?
Probably I would, but, well, I would have to go through probably different school, maybe school of contemporary dance, but what ballet gave me definitely was physical technique that allows me to do things physically pretty easily, but I had to really get rid of certain stereotypes and certain tension in the body that took me many years to release because everyone could see that I'm a ballet dancer. I was walking a certain way, I was carrying my body a certain way. So to release all the tension, to release tension in my spine and neck, it took me really some time. So it was not so easy to immediately. But what also ballet gave me was certain struggle that I consider to be very helpful for artists, that is something like a creative wound you have in your body, in your soul, and that I am not indifferent to certain things. I am super sensitive to my freedom. I am super sensitive to the power, and it brought definitely awareness to the topics that if I would not go through, I would not be able to understand them. So I say this hypersensitivity that I have is on one hand very problematic, but on the other hand, it's I feel blissful because it's this creative potential that is within myself.
Mischenka Chekhova, who I spoke to for this week's edition of One on One. And we'll, of course, find many, many more editions, hundreds upon hundreds of them, in fact, at the website of Radio Prague International. In the meantime, from me, Ian Willoughby, thank you for listening and speak to you soon.